For some time they talked about the idle things and the important things which husband and wife so often have to discuss in times of stress. People do not bother about such things when conditions are good. Hoagy wanted to know if she had his will safely, if his insurance policies were to hand, and then he suggested that his chief assistant at the factory should take over and become manager. In the afternoon the father came along and Hoagy said to him, "Oh, father, I am so afraid to die. It is such an uncertain thing. I just don't know what to do." The father, like most parsons and clerics, uttered a lot of platitudes and as soon as he decently could he made his escape, having secured from Hoagy the promise of a nice fat check for the church as soon as he was able to write. The day wore on. The afternoon gave way to early evening, and early evening gave way to the darkening of the night. The lights of the city outside came on and made distorted patterns on Hoagy's wool. He watched them with fascination and wove quite a number of fantasies about the patterns. Then he dropped off to sleep. The telephone was ringing insistently, a harsh metallic clatter, a terrible sound in the darkness of the night when a woman had her husband desperately ill in a hospital. The phone burden shrilled. Mrs. McCaughwaska sat up with a start in her lonely bed and reached out for the phone. "Mrs. McCaughwaska, Mrs. Hoagy McCaughwaska?" queried a voice. "Yes, speaking, what is it?" she asked. The voice replied in solemn tones, "Mrs. McCaughwaska, your husband has taken a turn for the worse. The doctor thinks it would be advisable if you came to the hospital and if you have any relatives there bring them with you. But drive carefully, Mrs. McCaughwaska, drive very carefully indeed because at such times people tend to drive too fast. May we expect you within the hour?" "Oh dear, oh dear," exclaimed Mrs. McCaughwaska. "Yes, we will be there as soon as we can." She hung up and slowly got out of bed. Pulling on a dressing robe she went out from her bedroom and knocked sharply at another door just a little down the corridor. "Mother, mother," she called, "wake up, mother. I think Hoagy is dying, we shall have to go to the hospital. Are you awake, mother?" The door opened and the elderly lady who was Hoagy McCaughwaska's mother came out. "Yes, yes, I will dress immediately. You do the same." Hoagy looked up with a start. His mother and his wife were sitting beside his bed. Was it his mother and his wife? Hoagy could not decide. Then what were all the other people? Some of them were floating in the air smiling benignly upon him. And then Hoagy's eyes widened. He saw an angel flying just outside his window. The angel was dressed all in white, in long robes, her wings were flapping away just like on a mechanical toy, Hoagy thought. The angel looked at him, smiled and beckoned. Hoagy felt a strong, strong pull. He wanted to follow her. It was a truly peculiar sensation. The room was growing dark. There seemed to be purple shadows, a purple like purple velvet, and in the purple velvet he could see well. He supposed it was specks of light, that was what it appeared to be. It appeared to be like dust motes dancing in the sunlight. He looked about, there was his wife to the right of him, there was his mother to the left of him, and what was that man in black doing? Mumbling away, he was. Oh dear, yes, Hoagy remembered it now. He was being given extreme unction by the priest. Hoagy was shocked beyond belief because he found to his very considerable dismay that he could read the priest's thoughts. The priest was thinking that if he put on a good show Mrs. McCaughwaska could give a very good donation to the church. These were rich people, the priest was thinking, they should be good for quite a substantial amount. So as soon as he had done the extreme unction he turned to Mrs. McCaughwaska and pronounced a blessing all the time thinking, that should be good for at least another $100. Hoagy started to tremble. He felt most insecure. The bed seemed to be of a fluffy material and it did not seem able to contain him. His fingers clasped the bedclothes in desperation. He tried to stay in the bed because every instinct that he had was urging him to rise upwards toward the light. He's going, he's slipping," Hoagy heard a voice say, and then there was a strange rustling. He tried to cry out in terror but he found he could not speak. He imagined himself to be like a kite. He looked down and saw that he had a sort of shimmering silvery cord stretching from him down to some stupid looking body on a bed. With a start of recognition, he realized that he was gazing upon his dead or dying body. He could see the head of his wife, the head of the priest, the head of his mother. And then the doctor came bustling in, making quite a show. He unbuttoned Hoagie's pajama jacket and quite unnecessarily applied a stethoscope, and then gravely nodded his head. With that theatrical gesture, he pulled up the sheet to cover Hoagie's face. He made the sign of the cross, the priest made the sign of the cross, and the two women did likewise. Come with us," the voices whispered to Hoagie. "Let yourself go free, we are looking after you. All is well, you are going to heaven." "Yes, to heaven, to heaven," chorused other voices. Hoagie felt a slight jerk and instinctively he looked down. He saw that silvery cord collapsing, fading, dropping away. He saw with quite an amount of vertigo that he was flying high over the hospital, high over the city, and getting high very quickly. He looked about him and with some astonishment found that he was being borne aloft by four angels. Their wings were flapping and they were all gazing upon him with rapt attention. Together they sped up through the dark sky to the chant of, "We are going to heaven, we are going to heaven." Chapter 9, Borne Aloft in the Arms of Angels. Oh boy," said Hoagie to himself. Then suddenly there was a tremendous pull on Hoagie and he found himself torn away from the arms of the angels. Down, down, down he fell, turning head over feet through the living darkness. As suddenly as it occurred, it ceased and Hoagie seemed to be bouncing on the end of a piece of rubber or acting like a yo-yo. He was confused and quite disoriented. He seemed to be somewhere, but where he could not tell. He twisted about and then, as though he were peering through a hole in the ceiling or a hole in the floor, he saw a weird scene. Hoagie was looking down into a funeral home. He shuddered with fright as he looked and saw all those naked bodies there on peculiar tables and all having the most diabolical things done to them. Some were having blood drained out, others were having body orifices stopped up to prevent leakage, and off in a little cubicle Hoagie saw himself. The body which he had left. He was on one of these strange tables and bending over him was a young woman with a cigarette drooping loosely from her lower lip. Hoagie really started with astonishment when he observed that the woman was shaving the face of his dead body. As he watched, a man hurried across the floor beneath and said, "Do a good job, Beth. Mr. McCogwasco was a very important man. We've got to have him on display by this afternoon. Get on with it, will you?" The woman just nodded her head and went on with her work. She shaved him very, very closely indeed, then she applied makeup. She brushed his hair or what hair he had left on his head and applied dye to various grey patches. Then she looked critically at his body and walked to the door of the cubicle and yelled, "Hey boss, this stiff's ready. Come and okay, will ya?" The boss hurried out of the little cubicle at the far end and rushed towards her screaming excitedly, "You mustn't say things like that, Beth, you mustn't say things like that. This is the body of Mr. Hoagie McCogwasker, a very important local man. I demand that all these bodies be treated with respect." "Well boss, you don't show respect to some of them," Beth replied. "I mind some of the stiffs you've tumbled in the sawdust and screwed down quick. They didn't get much, did they? But okay, have it your way, you're the boss. Okay, goodbye Mr. McCogwasker," she said as she sauntered jauntily off to another job. Hoagie turned away in amazement. When, after some undetermined time, he was compelled to look down again, he found that his body had vanished and another body was being brought in. It was all wrapped up in a whole mass of cellophane, folded up like a parcel of laundry, he thought. He watched with interest as the cellophane sheeting was unwrapped and the body was exposed. It was a woman, and the bossman and male assistant soon got her clothes off. Hoagie, a most modest man, averted his eyes, and in doing so he looked rather further than he had seen before, and he saw one of the display rooms. There he was, propped up in a very expensive casket, and there were people gazing down on him. They were drinking coffee, he saw. One put his coffee cup down on the casket. Hoagie looked down at himself and thought that he looked just like a film star, the way he had been painted and powdered and dyed and shaved and all the rest of it. He turned away in disgust. Time passed. How long? No one knows. It must have been 2 or 3 days anyway. Time does not matter in the life beyond this. But Hoagy was stuck in a certain spot, and then suddenly he was moved again. He looked down and found that he was in a hearse being driven to a church. He saw the casket taken into the church and he saw the Roman Catholic memorial service. Then he saw the parson go up into his pulpit and give a eulogy on Hoagy McCoguasca. "This dearly beloved brother," intoned the parson, "is now in the arms of Jesus in heaven enjoying the rewards of the virtuous." Hoagy turned away, and when next he looked it was because of an insistent tugging. Downwards his gaze swept to find that he was being carried into the churchyard. Then there followed more service, and he jumped as a great clod of earth came tumbling down onto the casket. But then he felt very foolish indeed as he realized that the body was down there and he was up here, wherever there and here was. But with that, with the filling in of the grave, Hoagy felt free. He soared upwards with a force beyond his control, and then there was a little clunk and he found to his complete amazement that he was again resting in the arms of these angels. As soon as he was in their arms their wings started flapping and their faces started smiling. They bore him upwards well. He did not know which way they were going, he would have said every which way, but they travelled at speed through a darkness which seemed to be living. It seemed to be a darkness made of black velvet. But then in the distance light appeared, a glorious golden light. Hoagy strained his eyes in the direction from which the light came. They sped onwards and the light became brighter and bigger, leaving Hoagy blinking with the intensity of it. Then as the angels emerged from what seemed to have been a long tunnel, Hoagy saw the pearly gates sparkling away in front of him, great golden gates speckled all over with immense pearls. There was a gleaming white wall extending from the gates to the left and to the right, and through the bars of the gates Hoagy could see immense domes of cathedrals and spires of noble churches. There was the sound of music in the air, holy music, abide with me music, with a few bars of onward Christian soldiers coming from somewhere else. But they approached the gates with the angels still clutching him and their wings still flapping. Saint Peter or some saint appeared at the gates and demanded, "Who comes in the name of the Lord?" One of the angels answered, "Mr. Hoagy McCoguasca, late of earth, comes. We demand admission." The gates swung open and Hoagy saw his first saint close up. The saint seemed to be clad in a long white robe like an old-fashioned nightgown, reaching from his neck down to his ankles. He had a pair of wings tucked on behind which flapped easily, and from somewhere at his back a shining brass rod extended a few inches above his head, and from the topmost point there was a shining golden halo. The saint looked at Hoagy, and Hoagy looked at the saint. The latter said, "You will have to go to the recording angel first to make sure that you are indeed entitled to enter. Over there, second door to the right." The angels took a fresh grip of Hoagy. He felt that he was in the hands of delivery men. And their wings started to flap. Slowly the angels bore him along the smooth, clean roadway. Along the sides of the roadway there were saints or heavenly inhabitants sitting on grassy banks practicing harp playing. The noise was quite indescribable because they were all trying different musical pieces. But soon they reached the office of the recording angel. Gently the attendants upended Hoagy so that he stood on his feet. Gently they propelled him forward. "In there," said one, "give all the necessary details, date of death and all the rest of it. We'll wait." So in Hoagy went, and he saw a benevolent old saint sitting on a high stool, his wings flapping and looking over gold-rimmed spectacles, peering short-sightedly at Hoagy. He licked his thumb and pushed over a few pages of an immense ledger, muttering to himself as he did so. Then he stopped suddenly and held the page while his left hand extended upwards. "I've got it," he said. "Name Hoagy McCoguasca, Mel, died unexpectedly." "Yes, that's him, that's you. I've got your picture here." Hoagy looked on dumbly. It seemed to be a peculiar process to be going on like this. The old fellow's wings were flapping about and they were making a noise as if the things were rusty. The recording angel jerked his thumb over his shoulder and said, "Thataway, Thataway, they're waiting for you outside. They'll do the right thing by you." Hoagy found himself moving. It was nothing to do with him, he was just moving, and he went out without going through a doorway. Outside, as soon as they saw him, his attendants started their wings flapping again and their faces smiling. They caught hold of Hoagie and whisked him through the air. "Now you'll have to go to church," said one. "Yes, just as well get in the swing of things at the start," said the other. And with that they swooped down and entered the massive front entrance of a cathedral. Inside there were angels sitting all over the place, their wings flapping in tune to the music. Hoagie was becoming more and more shocked. This seemed to be a travesty of things, but he stayed for the service, which seemed to go on for an endless time, and all the way through the angels were flapping their wings, crossing themselves, and bowing to the altar. At last it was all over and all the angels flew up like a flock of doves or pigeons, and Hoagie was left in the empty cathedral. He looked about him and marveled. It was impossible that this could be heaven. He had been misled all the way along. This talk of angels was nonsense. This talk of people singing and going to services all the time, it was too absurd to be believed, and immediately, it came to Hoagie that the whole thing was ridiculous. There was a sound like a clap of thunder and there seemed to be a rippling flash go down from the sky to the ground, and it was as though a great curtain was rent and fell away. Hoagie looked up astounded. There was his father coming towards him laughing and with his arms outstretched. "Oh Hoagie my boy," said Father McCogwaska, "you did hold to your religion-bred hallucination for quite a time, didn't you?" "Never mind, I went through all the same thing except that my hallucination led me to see Moses." "Well, now you've come out of that, we can get together and talk about things. Come with me, my boy, come with me. You have a lot of friends and relatives here. They want to talk to you." And Father McCogwaska led the way out to a beautiful, beautiful park which seemed to be thronged with people. The park was more beautiful than anything Hoagie had ever seen in his life before his life on Earth, of course. The grass was of a peculiarly pleasant shade of green and there were flowers the like of which he had never seen before, and he knew they were not flowers of Earth. The paths were wonderfully kept and there was not a speck of dust or litter to be seen. To Hoagie's amazed delight there were birds singing in the trees and there were small animals about, dogs and squirrels, and some other animals which were quite unknown to Hoagie. "Father!" exclaimed Hoagie, "do animals come here as well, then?" Father McCogwaska laughed. "Hoagie, my boy," he said, "you must not call me father anymore, for to do so would be just the same as calling an actor in a play by the name he used in that play. After the play is over the actor can change his role and change his name. On the last life on earth I was your father, but in some previous life you have been my father, or perhaps even my mother." Poor Hoagie's head absolutely reeled under that, it was so strange to him still. "But what am I to call you, then?" he asked. "Oh, until we get things settled more go on, call me father if you want to, it may save complications," said Father McCogwaska. Hoagie was looking at his father, and then he said, "But do tell me, where are we? This is obviously not heaven because you are a Jew, the Jews are not admitted to heaven." Father McCogwaska laughed uproariously. People looked in their direction and smiled, they had seen this sort of thing happen so many, many times. "Hoagie, my boy, Hoagie, some of the concepts on earth are completely wrong. I am a Jew, you say, well, I will tell you that I was a Jew while on earth. Now well, I belong to the true religion, the only religion, and the only religion is this: if you believe in a god or in a religion then that is a good religion. It doesn't matter here if you are a Jew, a Catholic, a Protestant, a Muslim, or anything else. But the difficulty is that when one is taught all the old fables of a certain religion then when one comes over here one is so hypnotized by what one expects that that is all that one can see. On earth there are people who go about hallucinating all the time, they think they are this, that, or something else. You may go to a hospital for the mentally afflicted on earth and you might find a few Napoleons, a few Jesus Christs or perhaps a few who call themselves Moses. These people really do honestly believe that they are what they pretend to be. Take, for instance," he pointed off into the distance, "over the well, over there at present there is a gentleman but newly arrived. While on earth he was taught that when he went to heaven he would have everything he wanted, dancing girls by the dozen, etc., etc. He is over the now living in a world of fantasy. There are dancing girls all over the place, and until he can see the fallacy of it all, then no one can help him. He may go on for years and years dreaming of this peculiar heaven which is peopled by dancing girls and loads of food. As soon as he sees the fault, the same as you did with your angels and their wings, then he can be helped. Food, father, food, said Hoagy. Now you have said something very sensible indeed. Where do we go to get food in this place? I am hungry. Father McCogwaska looked at Hoagy and said, Hoagy my boy, it should have dawned on you by now. Listen, you came here and you thought you were in heaven with angels all over the place, and more angels playing harps, and singing away and all that. But now you realize that it was mere hallucination. It is the same with our friend over yonder. He thinks he has dancing girls around him. He doesn't, it is just his uncontrolled imagination, as it was your imagination which led you to see angels. In the same way, if you want food well, imagine it. You can control your imagination and you can have whatever food you need. You can have roast beef if you want to, you can have hot dogs if you want to, or you can have a bottle of whiskey. It's merely illusion, of course. But if you do go through with this rubbish that you want food, then you'll have to follow everything through quite logically. You take in food, so then later you have to get rid of certain things in the ordinary process of elimination. So you have to imagine toilet facilities, and you have to sit on such an appliance and imagine, 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 and that's all it is. You won't make progress while you are just bound to the silly things of the world. Well, I do feel hungry. That's not imagination, I feel very hungry indeed, so if I am not allowed to have food because it is illusion, what am I to do to get rid of my hunger? Hoagy sounded quite petulant. Father McCogwaska responded mildly, of course you feel hungry because you have had such a pattern all your life. At certain stated hours you used to take in food, and you've got a habit of it now. If instead of imagining dead meat going into you, you think of healthy vibrations, then you won't feel hungry. Think, Hoagy, all around you there is vibrant energy, it's pouring into you from everywhere. As soon as you realize that this is your food, your substance, you will not feel hungry. To imagine meats and drinks is entirely a backyard maneuver which will delay your progress quite a bit. Hoagy pondered the problem, and then he opened his mouth to protest and found that he was not hungry anymore. Father, Hoagy said, you look precisely as you looked when you were on Earth. How can that possibly be? You have been here some time. Surely you should be looking a lot older, and, in any case, as you are presumably just a soul now, well, it's got me so confused I don't know what to believe or what to do. Father McCogwaska smiled a smile of compassion. We all go through this, you know, Hoagy. Some of us can rationalize more quickly than others. But suppose I had appeared to you as let me say, a young woman or a young man, would you have recognized me as the person you knew on Earth? If I came to you and talked to you with a different voice and with different features and a different frame, you would have thought it was just someone practicing a confidence trick on you. So here I appear to you as you remembered me, I speak to you in the tone that you remembered. In the same way, your friends who are here, your relatives who are here, will all appear as the familiar persons you knew on Earth, appear to you as such because you only see what you want to see. If I look at Mr. X, I know what I see. Mr. X looks in a certain way to me, but your conception of Mr. X may be quite different, and so you will see a different Mr. X. It's as though we were standing facing each other and one of us holds up a coin. One of us will see the head, the other will see the other side. It is the same coin, but we shall see different aspects of it. So it is here, so it is on Earth even. No one knows precisely how one sees another person. The thing is never discussed, it is never thought about. So here we appear to others as we did upon Earth. Hoagy had been looking out across the park and he started with amazement at what he saw. There was a very pleasant lake, and on the lake there were boats, and there were people in the boats rowing, sculling. Hoagy sat there on a park bench absolutely staring across at the boats. Father McCogwaska turned to him and said, well, why shouldn't they have some fun, Hoagy? They are not in hell, you know, They are doing what they like to do, and that is a very good state to be in. Here they can think up a boat, and they can go out on the river and enjoy some of the sensations, although greatly enhanced here, that they enjoyed so much on Earth. For a time Hoagie could not reply. He was too amazed, too dumbfounded, and then he burst out, "But I thought we here were spirits, souls floating around. I thought we should go about singing hymns and reciting prayers. This isn't a bit what I expected of heaven." "But Hoagie, Hoagie, you are not in heaven, you are in a different dimension in which you can do things you couldn't do on Earth. You are here as a sort of halfway station. Some people experience considerable trauma in dying in the same way that babies born to Earth may have considerable trauma when they are born. They may have to be delivered by instruments and then they get some damage as a result. Well, it's the same with dying. Some people, particularly if they have led a bad life, have a hard time in getting over and getting free of the shackles of Earth. A mild illustration is the way in which you have been wanting food. You don't need it, you know, you just think up your food and your clothes." Hoagie looked down at himself and then he said, "Bodies, bodies. If we are souls, why do we have these bodies? What do we need them for?" Father Makogwaska smiled and said, "If you could appear on Earth now, you would be a ghost, although more likely you would be quite invisible. People would walk through you and you would walk through them because of the difference in vibration. Here you see me, you can touch me, I am solid to you and you are solid to me. We've got to have some sort of vehicle in order to have our being. We've come from Earth and now we have a different body on this intermediate plane. Our bodies still have a soul. The soul goes all the way up to the overself, which is many planes above. We have a body here that we may learn things still by suffering as on Earth, although of a much milder nature. But when we get up to, let us say, the ninth dimension, we shall still have a body suitable to the ninth dimension. If a ninth dimension person came down here now, he would be invisible to us and we would be to him because we are so different. We progress from plane to plane, and wherever we be, no matter the plane, no matter the condition, we always have a body suitable for that condition." Father Makogwaska laughed before saying, "You think you are talking to me, Hoagie, but you're not, you're not. You are doing it all by telepathy. We don't use speech here except under the most unusual conditions. We use telepathy instead. But we have to go, my boy. You have to go to the Hall of Memories, and in that hall you and you alone will see everything that you have done and thought about doing while on the Earth. You will see what you wanted to do, you will see your successes, and they will appear unimportant, and you will see your failures. You judge yourself, Hoagie. You judge yourself. There is no wrathful God sitting in judgment and panting to consign you to hell or to eternal damnation. There is no such thing as hell. Well, there is. Hell is Earth, and there is no such thing as eternal damnation. On Earth you experienced certain things and you try to do certain tasks. You may fail at those tasks, but that isn't important. What is important is how one tried to do a thing, how one led one's life. And you or your overself will judge how you lived and died on Earth. You will decide what else has to be done to accomplish the task you set out to do and maybe have not completed. But come, we must not stay here chatting idly." Father Makogwaska got to his feet and Hoagie rose with him. Together they strolled over the green close-cut lawn, stopping for a short time by the banks of the lake to admire the boats, to admire the waterfowl playing on the surface. And they then continued on their way. Hoagie laughed out loud as they rounded a bend in the path and came along toward a very pleasant tree which had a bough stretching horizontally from it, for on that horizontal bough three cats were lying full length, tails drooping over the edge of the bough, and the three cats were purring, and purring, and purring in what Hoagie regarded as the warm afternoon sunlight. They stopped for a moment to look at the cats. The latter raised their heads, opened their eyes and smiled at the sight of Hoagie's amazement. Then, having had their amusement, the cats put their heads back on the bark of the bough and drifted off to sleep. "No one here would harm them, Hoagie," said Father Makogwaska. "Here there is peace and trust in each other. This particular plane of existence is not a bad one at all." "Oh!" exclaimed Hoagie, "then there are many planes of existence, are there?" "Oh yes, there are as many as are needed," replied Father McCogwasker. People go to the stage most suitable for them. People come here to have a little rest and to decide what they are going to do, what they can do.